And we find ourselves in a very lonely position. There is a great loneliness in leadership. But I repeat, we have to live with ourselves. A man has to live with his conscience. A man has to live up to his inner feelings. And I think just as a nation does. And we must face that situation. And I think that's all I'd like to say about it today. I know of few alternatives with which we can live, other than the alternative, I think, with which we are immediately faced.
Welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum. I am the host and creator of LeadingLDS.com, an online platform to help leaders in the LDS Church come together and share some awesome, awesome ideas. Today, we have another installment of the How I Lead podcast, and these have been a lot of fun to do. I encourage you, if you have yet to do so, check out the last one I did with Pamela Mills, who is a Relief Society president. I've been getting a lot of good, great feedback from her words and the things that she taught and so forth. So, worth your time. Check it out. And it's cool to see the many people that are joining the Leading LDS community by going to leadinglds.com and signing on to the newsletter. And there's going to be some further information and news coming through those channels. And so, it's important that you sign on to that the newsletter so that you can get that information. So today we have the opportunity to interview Nathan Waldron, who is an Elders Quorum president, been in an Elders Quorum presidency for a few years now, has some great ideas, some great application, and so forth. He is one of the many leaders that have been inspired by past leaders. And I love hearing how he talked about his previous Elders Quorum president and the way it inspired him to be a better leader and to really strive to care for the one. During our interview, we both referenced the book Influencer by Vital Smarts. I've done various posts about it that you'll find linked in the show notes. If you haven't read this book, I encourage you to check it out. A must for any Elders Quorum president out there, or any leader for that matter, especially ones dealing with home teaching. So, good interview with President Waldron. Check it out. So, Nathan, where do you live and as an Elders Quorum president?
I live in Roy, Utah.
Roy, Utah. I'm sure there's some listeners out there. It's pretty typical Utah ward that you live in, or?
Yeah. Numbers-wise, it's a 500, 600 members. Average attendance is in the 20 to 30%, sometimes 40, but... 9 o'clock church, kick some of those people out. So yeah,
there you go. But, you may not see some of those till January next year, right?
So. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Good to hear human nature is alive and well in your ward as well.
Yep.
Now, are you from Roy? Did you grow up in those parts, or where are you originally from?
I was born and raised, lived in Utah until I was 10, and then my parents moved us to Montana. So from 10 until graduation, I lived in Montana, and that's what I would really consider my formidable years. I was one of six members in my high school at that point.
Wow.
Small school. There were 69 students in my graduating class. And everybody knew who the Mormons were and knew what to invite them to and what not to invite them to. And then I moved to Arizona, went to school in Arizona, my mission, and then back to Arizona and finished up school, and now I'm here. So,
okay, which school in Arizona?
DeVry. It's a tech school.
So. Right on. Okay. And where did you serve your mission?
Madrid, Spain.
Wow. All right.
Loved it.
Nice. Any specific uniqueness to your mission as opposed to others that you've heard of?
The temple was under construction while I was there. I mean, so that's really the biggest thing that was going on for us. We were the only landlocked mission in Spain at the time. So, and we were also the only mission that only learned one language in Spain, which was, you know, unique for the Spanish missions.
Nice. So I assume that one language was Spanish, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
The true pure version of Spanish.
All right. Now here we go. All right. With the what do they call the seta or whatever with the lith?
Claro que sí. Yes. The la theta.
Yeah. I learned from Mexican, so I definitely don't have that in my vocab, but it does make it sound a little bit different, but you know, we'll see when we get to heaven, what language they're speaking.
So. Well, we can argue about that later.
Yeah, that's another podcast, right?
Yes.
Cool. And so you return home from your mission, finished up school, and now you work in the IT field. Is that right?
Yeah, finished up my schooling. Actually, when I moved back to Utah, I'd never wanted to live in Utah, but it was one of those I knew it was right. So I moved back here and ended up meeting my wife. I got my master's degree in the meantime, met my wife, and we've been married 8 years now. So
okay, and is she from Utah, so she kept you there?
No, she's actually from Montana as well. We both have ties here. In fact, my dad and her uncle were friends. My grandma and her grandma were friends. I mean, there were a lot of family ties that we found out after we got married. So, but we're here for now. At least another 3 years, it looks like. I'm going back to school, so we'll see what happens after that.
Cool. Now, how would you describe the phase of life that you're in right now? You have little kids running around, or?
Yes, we've got three kids. The oldest is 6 and a half, and the youngest is 8 and a half months. So,
wow,
that is busy. My wife's in the Relief Society presidency, so she's busy doing that, and I'm busy with my calling. And you know, it's go go go. I mean, I do have the benefit of working from home a few days a week, which is certainly beneficial for us.
Cool. And how long have you been the Elders Quorum president in your ward?
Just over a year. It was last April, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay. And how did, maybe tell us how, what's the story of you being called? Was it something you expected? Was it out of the blue? How did that go?
A little bit of both, actually. I was called as first counselor in October of, the year before, so 2012. And everything was going well. No, you know, we were considering moving, at that time, and I got a phone call from the bishop, and he said, "Hey, are you still thinking about moving?" And I said, "Well, it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. Doesn't feel right at this time." And then I found out that he'd been probing my wife about a few things. And so I started piecing things together. But at the time, the executive secretary was going on a mission. So I figured, okay, executive secretary, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Get the phone call from the stake and get the appointment set. And I went with the bishop to do something. And I said, "So what's going on? Why am I having this, meeting with the stake?" And he said, "Oh, I guess you'll have to wait and see." And then over the course of a week, I kind of pieced things together because I knew that the interview was with the stake president and not one of his counselors. And, you know, so between me and my wife, we were able to piece it together. And then the only outstanding question was, where's the Elders Quorum president going? So
yeah, yeah. And so at that time, you were the first counselor when you were called?
Yes.
And how long had you been the first counselor before you were called?
Just 6 months.
Okay. So you'd barely gotten your feet wet as the counselor, let alone taking over the quorum, huh?
Yes. Okay. And I still hold it against the Elders Quorum president, who I replaced.
And did he move and he's in hiding from you? Or?
He is in the bishopric. He is the second counselor in the bishopric. So.
The domino effect, huh? I see.
Yes.
Okay. So just like any of these interviews of how I lead, I've asked you to kind of put together five key takeaways that you've learned so far in leadership and so forth. I want to go through that. But before I do, maybe explain, we've had various conversations before this interview. How did you come across leading LDS?
I had a training class for work, Influencer, which is the six source model. And after the first day of that class, I drove home and I just knew that this had to be applied to home teaching. So I started doing some searching and ended up at Leading LDS and have used it religiously since.
Okay. And so you, the influencer, referring to a book influencer, which I've done various posts on, and I'll link to those posts in the show notes here. But Influencer is one of a handful of books that Vital Smarts has put together, which does corporate training and leadership training and really fantastic stuff. I've completely drunk the Kool-Aid and am a full believer in what they put out there, and really you can apply it to most things in life. So I'm interested to, and we'll talk a little later on how you've applied that to home teaching, but let's talk about your first point of kind of the takeaways. If you were to go back in time to President Waldron day one, the first thing that you'd share with him is caring for and loving the one and lifting them up. How have you gone about that?
I don't know if I've done as good of a job as the previous president. That really came from him. He knew how to, and I'm the result of that care that he initiated. I mean, he was just fantastic. No matter what it was, he made sure to hone in on that person's unique abilities to do whatever, help them feel the effects of the atonement in their life, especially. That was the biggest impact he had on me, and I hope I can carry some of that on. Not sure how I'm doing at it, but definitely keeping the one individual in mind at all times is definitely something that I strive to do, rather than, you know, the quorum as a whole.
Okay. And so, from your experience with the previous Elders Quorum president, was it mainly just developing a relationship of friendship? Did you feel like he knew you specifically and that type of thing?
Yeah. And the situation's unique. He found me at a time when I needed him. And he, you know, called me in, had a interview, and we talked, and he called me to repentance. I wasn't where I was needed to be, and he knew that. Thankfully, through the inspiration that he received, he knew that, and he was able to lovingly guide me through that process and help me to get to where I was going to be. And I think the biggest impact for me was that he was consistent. It wasn't just, hey, how are you doing, you know, on Sunday. It was every day of the week, you know, what can I do for you? I knew that if I ever needed something, he would be there.
Cool. And so really that one-to-one interaction that he had, and I'm sure he was doing that with others in the quorum at the time, or, you know, maybe it's just a habit he has in his life, and that great example for sure.
Yeah, it was.
So number two, you said establishing a vision and keeping it in sight. This is a tough thing to do as a leader. And how have you approached establishing a vision?
That is one thing that my bishops highly suggested, and it's something that I've tried to do personally. I don't think I've done it as well as I would like to have. But as far as the quorum, my first meeting with my counselors, I said, what do we want to accomplish? I know our stake has a vision of establishing Zion. Our ward has adopted that, and our ward vision is to establish Zion within our ward. And we wanted to, within the quorum, use that same vision, but make it a little more applicable, a little more personal, maybe. And so we've adapted that to specifically address the quorum as a group of brothers who show our love for Christ and apply his atonement.
Cool.
And then,
go ahead.
I send out an email every week to the quorum, and that is at the top of every email, so that it's constantly in, at least every week, it's in front of their face and they have the opportunity to read it or ignore it.
Okay, so a constant reminder of what the vision is, and any other kind of tactical things you do to keep that in sight, as you mentioned?
A lot of our activities are, I mean, we only really do two activities in the quorum. right now. That and so it's trying to build the relationships. That's more important, you know, because without the relationship, I can talk to anybody in the quorum, but they know that I don't really care because I don't have that relationship. So it's building those relationships, because building the relationships will create a bond that is more like brotherhood.
Yeah.
Right now we, you know, there are people in the quorum that I could go to, and I know that I would feel totally comfortable asking them anything and they would be able to do the same. There are others where that relationship doesn't exist, and that's where the breakdown is, and we need to work on that.
And when you say building a relationship, is it more between you and them, or is it more, or at the same time, is it between one another within the quorum?
One another especially. It's important that I have that relationship, but it's more important that they have that relationship. I'm going to move at some point. They're going to move at some point. But creating those relationships, especially at the home teacher level, you know, home teacher needs to care for the person that they are assigned. And without that relationship, then the home teachee, that family, will never feel cared for. They will never feel comfortable going to their home teacher at 2 o'clock in the morning. They will call me because I'm the president, or the bishop because he's the bishop, rather than their home teacher, who is a friend who cares.
Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned the two activities you have. You kind of use that to magnify the vision and the purpose of the quorum. Is that right?
We hope to. I mean, they're not specifically spiritual experiences. I mean, one of them is a trap shoot. I mean, but it gives them a time to get away, to spend some time together. If they want to bring their wives or, you know, loved ones, they're more than welcome to do that, but gives us a chance to at least get away and enjoy it. The last one we had was just a barbecue. Again, just an opportunity to sit down and work on those relationships.
You know, to some brethren, there's nothing more spiritual than a trap shoot, so there's nothing wrong with that. All right, number three, you said consistent emphasis on covenants we've made or can make and the associated responsibilities. Elaborate on that.
When I was first called as the first counselor, one of the first things that came to my mind was the oath and covenant of the priesthood. And as I studied that, I realized that that's fairly all-encompassing. I think that a lot of people who have received the Melchizedek priesthood don't recognize the covenants that they've accepted. And I'm including in that and home teaching, attending your meetings, all of that stuff. And it's making sure that they realize that you've agreed to this by receiving the Melchizedek priesthood. You have agreed to, or will agree to, for the prospective elders, to these things, and you need to make sure that you are diligent in performing those functions.
Okay, and creating an emphasis towards that, is it mainly often the topic of the leadership lessons, or how do you create a consistent emphasis on those oath and covenants?
It's more on my weekly emails that I send out, that, you know, those thoughts come and go as the week progresses. But as I sit down to, you know, send out my email, it's, you know, those thoughts are what come to my mind. What do I need? What do, you know, specific people need? And oftentimes it will be just one person who comes to mind. Or as I'm writing, I recognize that I'm really writing something for just one person, but something that the entire quorum can certainly learn from.
Yeah, cool. So, and one thing that's standing out to me as we talk is you really take time before you do things to kind of step back and say, you know, what's the purpose here? Like, what am I trying to accomplish? What's our vision? What's the emphasis of this email or this lesson and so forth? Is that kind of a habit you've created in your life, or does that come naturally? Or?
It may be a habit. I don't know. I've never really thought about it. I mean, I'm thinking through situations with my family. Yeah, I mean, I guess I do that somewhat with my family. It's I just feel with the quorum that I have to set a better example, which is kind of sad now that I say it. I mean, I should really be doing this for my family more than anything. But, you know, I guess we have done that in smaller pieces as a family. You know, what do we want to accomplish? What do we want to do? We haven't actually sat down to outline it. With young kids, it's a little hard. So, yeah.
Well, good. I think it's a great leadership skill when it, you know, it helps avoid, which is so easy to do in elders' quorum, just the going through the motions. You know, okay, here we are again on Sunday. Who's got the lesson? All right, let's get out of here and go home. And so I think it's great that you really take time to pinpoint the purpose of these actions you take. Number four, you just have one word, honesty.
Absolute honesty. And again, this is something I learned from the previous president. He had shared with me how much he hates lying, and that's because he had been in a situation where he recognized that he lied more than he should. And as I learned from him, I'm like, yeah, I do too. One of my first emails after I was called as president was, don't lie. I mean, and it came down to that simple question that you are asked all the time. How are you? And your default response is always, I'm fine, or I'm good, or whatever. Uh-huh. And, you know, my wife will ask me, and I'm like, oh, I'm fine. And I'll be lying to her. I mean, bold face, right? You know, and I recognize, no, I need to not even do that, because it's the little daily lies that lead to the big ones if you let them. So it's just striving to be honest in everything. But especially the little things, because the little things will lead to the big ones.
Yeah, sure. So do you find that you're really pushing yourself to kind of tell your quorum just how it is, and, you know, not in a dominant manner, but basically just being honest with them as far as you don't sugarcoat things and that type of thing? Is that a good description of that?
Yeah, I remember one of the emails I sent out recently, my wife read, and she said, oh, they're not going to like that. And I said, well, I don't care if they like it. And she mentioned specific people and said, well, you know, they're not going to like it because of this, that, or the other. And I'm like, well, if they don't, then they need to read the next sentence where I call them to repentance. You know, it is what it is. I'll do my best to make them feel good, but I'm not going to tell them that they're doing everything they should when they're not.
Okay, cool. And then the last one you have listed is dedication to the work. How dedicated are you, Nathan?
Probably not enough. I can guarantee you not enough. But I hope that we all feel that way to some extent, that, you know, we can always do more. Right now with my wife in the Relief Study presidency and me and my calling and the situation we're at and we're in life, I don't spend as much time as I should, or at least as much as I feel like I should, in serving others, reaching out to them. I mean, it's so easy nowadays with a simple text message can mean something to someone. It's that type of stuff that I really feel like I need to do more of. But it's keeping that on the mind. And, you know, it's sometimes the little things, helping clean the church. It's attending activities. It's, doing your home teaching. It's being dedicated to your family, praying and with your family and family home evenings. All those things are incorporated into the work. I mean, you name it, if it's gospel oriented in any way, shape or form, it fits in the work.
Yeah. You know, even today I had a similar thought, and I think it's just a consistent thought of a good leader is, I feel like I'm just not doing enough, and the battle never feels won. You know, there's always something else, but thankfully there's a bigger picture and a much larger sacrifice through Jesus Christ that, you know, helps us make the difference in those things as we fall short. So
absolutely. That's the joy of grace, right?
Amen, brother. So what's your typical week like? Obviously Sunday's probably busier, but maybe starting from your, you know, Sunday morning the alarm goes off, and which I'm willing to bet an alarm goes off at 9 o'clock church, and going throughout the week, like, what does a typical week agenda look like for you and your quorum?
Sundays we have 9 o'clock church. So, we fortunately don't have any leadership meetings that I get to attend before that. 2 weeks a month, we have ward council. 1 week it's PEC. Those are after church. The other week I usually have a presidency meeting. And then during the week, Mondays are obviously set aside and sacred for family and evening, but Tuesdays, my wife is out with Relief Society. She comes back and will fill me in on things that she's found out, which is amazingly wonderful to get the female perspective before I need to know it in some cases. And then I usually try to go out Wednesday or Thursday. If I can grab one of my counselors, I'll go with them. If not, I'll go by myself and go get a couple visits in to those who need it. Wednesdays, I usually try to send out my email, make sure that that's, you know, on someone's mind. And then, you know, some of the administrative stuff, making sure that home teaching's getting done and all that stuff.
Okay. And so it sounds like generally your meetings, whether it's presidency or PEC, is on Sundays, and then use the week to do visits and kind of the ministering things, right?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Now tell me about, I'm interested in knowing, especially with your IT background, I'm interested in knowing the kind of the technology you use, whether they're apps and so forth. But tell me more about this weekly email you send out. How is that formatted? How do you do that?
When I was put in as first counselor, one of the things that I wanted to do was be able to communicate better with the quorum. So we just obtained everybody's email address, whether that was from, you know, MLS or from the individuals themselves. And, we put them in a Google group. So we have a Google group for the Elders Quorum. And then that actually ended up spawning a Relief Society group, a High Priest group, and a Ward Council group. So my daughter just came in. So anyway, yeah. So that's the weekly email. Okay. So I send that out. And it really is just a thought, what's on my mind. And then a reminder about home teaching. Oftentimes that's a pretty static, hey, please report on your families. But, you know, sometimes, especially at month end, it's why do we do home teaching? Why do we need to report?
Yeah. And do they usually respond back with their report to that email or?
No, I've asked because the email group, it goes to everyone. So what they do is I've got a Google form set up that they can go in and fill out. They can text me, email me, or call me with reports on their families.
Nice. Cool.
So I think one of our, and I would propose that it's probably a big problem across the church is reporting it. I think the home teaching is getting done more than it's being reported.
Yeah.
The reporting is just not there. And I really wish the church would get on, you know, getting home teaching into LDS tools so they can report right from their phone when they walk out the door from that family.
Yeah. You know, as I talk with new Elders Quorum presidents, the one thing that they find even harder than getting the elders to home teach is actually collecting the numbers and getting them to report is almost just as hard in doing that. So any other technology that you use that you found helpful or?
We do have a ward Facebook page. I mean, so that one's nice for announcements and that. And then after your interview with, the LDS EQ Prez, I started using Trello.
Oh, cool.
And so I've introduced one of my counselors and secretary to that. And last night I converted the bishop over. So hopefully that will, I mean, I find it really helpful, especially with my weekly emails, as I'm driving and listening to conference or whatever it is, I can take a note right then and have it sit out there waiting for me to review it when I get to it.
Yeah, that's cool. Great. Yeah, I love project management systems. They're really, really beneficial. Any other apps or unique approaches you use with technology?
No, not that. Not that's coming to mind.
All right. So tell us, I want you to elaborate more on kind of your journey you've gone through with trying different ideas with home teaching, applying some of the influencer, the six source model, and those things. Tell us about that journey.
You know, that was when I first got put in as in the presidency, we were talking about home teaching, and home teaching was, you know, 10-15%. And that shocked me. But you know, that was in October. I had my training in November and then spent November, December, and January and most of February working through the six source model and its application to home teaching. And it was really all about making it easy. The easier you make it for someone to fulfill their duty, the more likely it is that they're going to do it. I have felt strongly that no matter how easy it is, though, there are people who aren't going to do it. And then it comes down to working with those individuals and trying to figure out why they aren't wanting to perform the duties that they've been asked to do. One of the things that has been on my mind, especially from one of your other posts, is the PPIs, the monthly PPIs. So that's something I'm in the process of getting set up so that I can sit down with the core members on a monthly basis and do that. But it really was developing that relationship. And I think to some extent we had to redefine home teaching. I still think a lot of people, and maybe even in my quorum, feel that home teaching is go knock on the door, go in, sit down, give a lesson, and leave once a month. And that's not it, at least not to me. Home teaching is about a relationship. It's about long term. It's knowing that you've got someone who cares for you and that you can talk to at a moment's notice and who will be there. I remember one of the best home teachers we had home taught three or four of his neighbors, and they were all inactive, and I had never seen them in church, but he would just go and walk with his wife and talk to them. That was it. They were neighbors. He wasn't there as a home teacher. He was there as a neighbor. And to, you know, some small degree, things started to happen. Others, they said, no, leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you. You're a strange guy. So it's trying to balance that, making sure people understand that you've just got to be their friend. And however you're going to do that, make it happen. And it may take months or years to get in the door, but it's worth it in the end, because especially if we, you know, like Pamela Mills said, you know, there are brothers, there are sisters. As long as if we truly felt that way for them, we would go to the end of the earth to help them.
Cool. And so one of the you mentioned, the first thing is just making it easier for them. I mean, that fits into the six source model of, you know, personal motivation and personal ability. And maybe you've already mentioned it, but any specific, like, changes or adjustments or explanation you gave to your quorum in order to make it easier for them, or
all of the above? Home teaching, our ward is it's very unique in its shape. And so we have four distinct areas. And the first thing, as I started to look at it, it was we needed to divide it up so neighbors teach neighbors, or at least they're really close to each other. So that was the first thing, is get them geographically close. And as we did that, then it was, okay, now do we have any existing relationships that are positive that will work? And so maybe they already serve in Young Men together, or maybe they have their friends from, you know, past experiences or whatever together. So we'd maybe look at putting those together or have them home teach each other, those type of situations. And then before we actually rolled this out, I had a lesson, and we sat down as a quorum and said, what is it going to take to make this easy on you, and let them make some of those decisions? You know, at first I was thinking we need to divide the ward into three areas, and they looked at it and said, no, we need four. Three won't work. And I said, well, if you do that, this is the result, and, you know, more inactives or whatever. And they said, no, that will work better for us. So it was having that discussion and helping them to understand that this is what we're trying to accomplish. And the other thing that I haven't done as good about is trying to get everybody to hold everybody else accountable, having more conversations between quorum members about home teaching and, hey, how are Sam and Betty Joe, or what, you know, those types of things. That hasn't quite happened. It's probably more my fault, because I haven't driven that home, and I don't do that as well as I should. But helping them to develop that relationship in between the members as well. You know, in my mind, if I home teach Sam, but my counselor is best friends with Sam, and he knows how Sam is doing, that counts. It doesn't matter who's doing it, as long as we have a report and know how that family is doing. That's what really matters.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is easier said than done. As I've done various posts referencing the, you know, the influencer six source model and so forth, it, you know, on paper, it just sounds like, man, this is a home run idea. And then the actual implementation of it, you suddenly realize, wow, like, this may take an additional effort or better organization and so forth. And but I love your experience of, you know, having a lesson and just saying, you know, what are some ideas you have? One reminder I'm always giving the Elder Quorum present in my ward is that the quorum meeting, the third hour or whenever it is, shouldn't be just another Sunday school meeting. You know, we sometimes rush through announcements and maybe home teaching, and so that we can get on with the lesson. And I, you know, always encourage them, if there's a week that you need to step back and say, you know, there's a family that needs help, there's a concern that we have, or hey, let's just talk about home teaching in a way of not necessarily rebuking and saying, you know, you should feel bad about it, which I always discourage, but maybe just saying, let's just have a group discussion. What, look at our ward, it's kind of shaped weird. What do you guys think? What makes the most sense with you? Not that you have to do everything or make it a you know, a democratic vote of how we're going to do home teaching, but nonetheless, there's some people that have thought about this this as well, and new approaches you may not experience, so, or you may not have thought of. So I like that a lot. Anything, any other secrets that have made home teaching make more sense in your quorum?
One of the things, and this has come and gone as we've, you know, over the last year and a half, is having a home teaching moment. Celebrate the success, regardless of what success that is, whether it's, hey, I talked to my companion for the first time and I've been assigned to him for 6 years, or, you know, I have an appointment with my family's. Celebrating each and every little success matters, because then it helps everybody get excited, in my mind, about, hey, they recognize that I'm doing something. You know, it's not going to work for everybody, but as long as it works for some, that's what's going to help.
Yeah, I think in the dynamics of each quorum from ward to ward and state to state, it really does change, you know. And so your approach may not work for somebody on the other side of the world. So
absolutely.
Well, cool, Nathan. Just a final question is, how has your time as leadership impacted your testimony and made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
It goes back to that, the, you know, one of the first things that I learned about caring for the one. And again, it's more as a recipient of that care and that love than it as someone who's been giving it. I can't emphasize enough the power of talking and reaching out to that one person who may or may not have friends, who may not understand what's going on in their own life and need someone to talk to. I just yesterday was listening to a talk in, I think, General Conference, or maybe it was a BYU devotional, I don't remember, but where the story about President Monson was relayed, that he went to a state conference, and while he was there, the state president said, hey, this family needs you to visit him and visit them, and their daughter's dying of cancer. And he said, you know, there's not enough time, there's not enough time in the schedule. And yet, as he sat there in conference, he felt that he needed to go, and he made his schedule, you know, rearranged it so that he went and ministered to the one. He didn't, you know, there was an entire stake who would have loved that, to have more time with him, but he ministered to the one.
That concludes the interview with Nathan Waldron. I hope it was helpful. This is a call out to any other Relief Society presidents, Elders Quorum presidents, High Priest Group leaders, bishops, who wouldn't mind to take a moment with me and go through a similar interview. I am impressed by the way that these interviews are reaching out to others and sharing ideas, both spiritual and practical in nature, to further the work across the world. And so, though you may be timid and shy to maybe be on an interview and talk about how you lead, I encourage you to reach out to me. Let's do it and share what you've found to be a great leader. Again, this is another reminder to go to leadinglds.com, comment on this post, any insights or further ideas that you have that may add to the discussion. We'd love to hear them. And also, while you're there, at the top of the page, join the Leading LDS newsletter and be a part of the community. Until next time, be a leader, not a calling.